everyone, there's only so much time in the day. That's why we edited this Vermont Edition podcast for brevity. I know you'll thank us.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. With less than a week left until the start of the Vermont school year, there are still many unanswered questions. Among them remains how many kids are actually enrolled in our public schools. At the biweekly state press conference yesterday, Dan French, the Secretary of the Agency of Education, was asked about how many families are planning to homeschool their children this year. This audio is courtesy of Orca Media.
Yeah, we're currently expecting that number to be over 4,000. The applications are still, we have sort of a bit of a log jam. So in the end, I expect the increase to be about 100% increase over last year.
Well, as it turns out, enrollments as of August 27th of last year, 2019, were 2,024. Enrollments as of August 27th of this year, 4,455. That is well over a 100% increase. But as Secretary French indicated, not all of them have been processed yet. And some families say they're going to start out the school year in the state system, but are prepared to pull their kids if the pandemic gets worse or if the learning structure of their districts doesn't work for their families. Or they may go back to the public school system as circumstances change. Today on the program, we're going to talk about homeschooling, first by drilling down into those numbers with VT Digger education reporter Lola Dufour, and later we'll talk about what it actually takes to homeschool with the president of the Vermont Home Education Network. Lola Dufour has been writing about homeschooling for Digger and joins us now. Lola, nice to talk with you again.
Nice to talk to you, too. Thanks for having me.
So I mentioned that number as of August 27th, almost 4,500 enrollments for homeschooling. That's a significant number and you know, a small minority, but a pretty significant chunk of Vermont students, too.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably about 4 or 5% of, you know, all Vermont kids when you compare that to the general school population. So, yeah, that's a lot of kids. And it's about twice as much as we had last year.
What do you attribute that to? I mean, it's pretty safe to assume that a lot of it is COVID related. But what are parents telling you about why they're deciding to homeschool their children?
Yeah, they're deciding to homeschool for a lot of different reasons. You know, for a lot of parents, the amount of in-person support that kids will be getting is too small, right? You know, in hybrid or fully remote environments, a lot of parents want more. A lot of parents want the opposite, right? They want a fully remote experience because they're really nervous about sending their kids back to school. And then there are also those who are looking at the overall landscape and just feeling really nervous about how unstable it all is, right? There is just a tremendous amount of uncertainty as we head into the school year. Different schools are doing different things. You know, school districts have expressed anxiety about being able to sustainably staff what they're doing. So, you know, I talked to one mother, for example, who said, "My daughter's already gone through enough upheaval. I'm going to keep her home just so that I can give her a consistent experience."
Do you hear from parents who say, if things change, I might put my child back in the public school system as well?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of parents are kind of still waiting to see what happens. A lot of parents might stick their kids back into school, depending on how things change, right? A lot of school districts have already said that they may be updating their plans and transitioning to more in-person school. There's also the possibility that schools will close down again if we see outbreaks. So all of these things could definitely mean that the enrollment picture is going to remain very fluid and very unstable.
Yeah, that's obviously hard for families and for kids, but it's also hard for the public school system that's trying to figure out, you know, how to staff for an uncertain enrollment picture and one that may change over the course of the year much more than normally. So what is that doing to schools, that sort of volatility?
Yeah, well, that volatility makes schools very nervous. And that's particularly as they look at next year. And that's because, I mean, budgets for the upcoming year are pretty much, for this year, are pretty much set.
Mm-hmm.
But enrollment numbers play into next year's budget. And next year's budget is expected to be extraordinarily difficult For school districts, there's going to be enormous pressure to cut because there's a hole in the education fund. And, you know, the overall fiscal picture for state and federal aid is very uncertain. So the pain that a lot of national school systems felt immediately is going to be delayed in Vermont. And the way that enrollment works, you know, a lot of people think that like money follows the child, and it doesn't quite work that way in Vermont. Schools can technically spend as much as they want so long as they get that approved by the voter. But fewer kids does put upward pressure on your property taxes, right? Because you get taxed based on how much you're spending, quote unquote, per pupil. So, you know, if schools see wild fluctuations in their enrollment because of homeschooling, and this could especially happen if you have, you know, certain school districts in which you have higher concentrations of homeschoolers, that could have really major implications on budgeting next year. And there's a lot of pressure on lawmakers to create some sort of hold harmless provision or to at least soften the blow where some schools districts might see, you know, like disproportionately large numbers of homeschoolers, especially because there's a concern that, you know, you might pull your kid and then they're not there when schools are doing their headcounts for the year in September and October, and then you might put them in back in later. So, you know, schools might actually have to provide services for kids that they're not getting credit for.
Right. Or you might put them in next year, but it just all seems so messy. Is that something the legislature is likely to tackle in their September session?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the House Education Committee is already talking about this and already talked about this with House Ways and Means. So this will definitely be, you know, a conversation that takes place soon and right now, because schools want to know the outcome of this discussion before they start budgeting, which really happens, you know, kind of late fall, early winter.
Yeah. You know, Lola, there's a lot we could talk about with homeschooling. And luckily we have the full hour to talk about it, although not the full hour with you. But one of the questions that you and I have sometimes talked about in education is equity issues. And these cross the board in all kinds of educational situations, but certainly here as well. And for a couple of reasons. I mean, one is that families who are enrolled in home study aren't eligible for free or reduced price meals through the school lunch program. And that is a significant way that a lot of families can boost their food budget on a weekly basis when their children are enrolled in schools. There's also buying a curriculum. If you're not able to create your own curriculum for each child that you choose to be homeschooling, you may want to buy some curriculum, and those can run into the thousands of dollars. Also, as we know, in most families, all parents are in the workforce. Any parents who are in the household are in the workforce. And so the ability to be home with your child can be a significant barrier. Do you think cost is preventing any Vermont families from choosing homeschooling this year?
Sure, absolutely. I think cost definitely does. Also, you know, whether or not you can afford to have a parent oversee this, you know, can you afford a private tutor, which a lot of, you know, affluent families are doing. Another key thing, you know, you mentioned free and reduced meals. Another really important piece is that if you homeschool, you lose access and entitlements to special education. So you're not likely to see a lot of students with disabilities have access to this option. So you're right. I mean, that there are, I mean, like a lot of school choice, right? The concern is always that it is segregative and that it is not equally accessible to everyone. And so you're right. There are a lot of reasons why poor Vermonters whose children have disabilities can't access this. And that's a real problem.
Yeah. And who addresses that problem? I mean, you know, it's not the school system's problem. You know, I don't mean it's not their problem, but you know what I mean? It, like, if you're enrolling your child or thinking of enrolling your child in a homeschool study, then you're no longer in the state school system. You're not sort of under the umbrella of the school system. So who looks at those kinds of equity issues?
Right. And I mean, also the macro problem is the more people opt out of the public system, the less likely people are to have, you know, society is to have buy-in into the public school system.
Right.
Meanwhile, the public school system is dealing with an increasing concentration of need because they, you know, must take care of all the children that, you know, can't, whose families can't afford private tutors, you know, pandemic pods, et cetera. So the whole homeschooling movement, you know, has also kind of become, not movement, but, you know, pandemic pods and homeschooling in this context, has served as a pretty potent symbol of inequality and education inequality in this pandemic.
Well, it's interesting to look at and interesting to think about. And I appreciate the reporting that you've done on this and your willingness to come on and talk a little bit about what you've learned. Thank you.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
That's Lola Dufour, VT Digger's education reporter, who's been looking at the rise of homeschooling in Vermont. And we have a link to her reporting at vpr.org. Today, we're talking about the rise in homeschooling in Vermont and around the country. As we just heard in our conversation with Lola Dufour, Vermont is expecting at least a 100% increase in students being homeschooled this year, which brings up all kinds of questions for the stability of Vermont's educational system, but also about what kind of education kids are getting and how parents are getting support. Nathan writes in to say, I was homeschooled through high school, as was my girlfriend. It served us quite well. We're both well-adjusted adults, and when it comes down to it, we don't think any other form of education would have served us well. Sometimes we reflect on the fact that when we, quote, graduated 12 years ago, there were far fewer resources for homeschoolers than there are now. Homeschoolers now have so many more opportunities. There are programs offered by public schools, libraries, museums, art centers, and even colleges. There are more homeschool groups, both on and offline. And of course, the internet has hundreds of excellent resources. I know that homeschooling isn't for everyone, but for those who choose it, there's never been a better time to try. And speaking of support and resources for schools, Nathan mentioned a lot of museums and other kinds of organizations are reaching out to people who are either homeschooling or doing remote schoolwork and want some supplemental material. Heather Kralik is calling in now. She's outreach coordinator at Kellogg Hubbard Library. Hi, Heather. Nice to talk with you.
Hi, Jane.
So what is Kellogg Hubbard doing?
Well, Kellogg Hubbard Library is just starting an initiative to reach out to homeschoolers. Our reach includes Montpelier, Berlin, Calais, East Montpelier, Middlesex, and Worcester. And what we would like to do or like to offer to support homeschoolers is we'll pull books for you, DVDs, audiobooks, games, puzzles, and we will deliver these resources to your homeschooling site.
Why are you doing that this year, Heather? What's the priority or the need that Kellogg Hubbard is trying to fill through that?
Well, one of the needs is that we usually host homeschoolers in the library, but currently the library is just open on a 30-minute kind of visitation. So we can't really host a whole catch of homeschoolers that usually come to the library to pull resources. So we're trying to make an effort to bring the library to you.
Well, that's really interesting. Heather, thank you for telling us about it. I appreciate it, and best of luck this year.
Yeah, and so what they can do, they can call the library, which is 223-3338, or they can email me through the library, and we can set up a connection and pull some resources.
Great. Thank you very much. That's Heather Kralik, Outreach Coordinator at Kellogg Hubbard Library. And let's talk a little bit more about what it actually takes to actually pull your children from the state system and to get started homeschooling. So what are the requirements and then how do you actually do it? Retta Dunlap is president of the Vermont Home Education Network and joins us now. Hi, Retta. Nice to talk
Hi.
With you.
Hi there. Thank you.
So are you surprised to see a more than 100% increase in, you know, I guess we still call it enrollment in homeschooling?
No, not at all. I heard the governor said back in the March, we're shutting down the schools, and I was stunned. And as the summer went on, I said, you know, there's going to be a huge influx. And then it came. And I know that my board and others on the message boards and Facebook pages and whatnot, we've been straight out trying to help all these new parents enroll, you know, and then they're doing so because of COVID, and some of them might stay. I expect most of them would go back to the public school because that's their preferred choice, is an institutional setting for their child. Mm-hmm. That could be public school because, you know, that would be the default because they don't have school choice or can't afford a private school. So, you know, their choice is an institutionalized setting because, you know, both parents work, single families, you know, things like that can kind of prevent people from trying homeschooling. So no, I'm not surprised at all.
You have experience with this. You chose homeschooling for your family. Can you talk a little bit about why and what you got from it?
Well, the first year I enrolled under 166B, which happened to be its birth year. It was put into the statutes in 1987. I, even before I had children, had been looking at homeschooling, thinking, you know, I want to do that because it just felt more natural to me, you know, organic, which is where, you know, I was and am. So I kind of chose it on purpose. I knew the public school was there just around the corner. If I should fail, they would, you know, come in and help, you know, I would enroll and they would help me. But no, since 1987, I have four kids. They're all grown now. Youngest is 31, I think it is. And, you know, so I'm very familiar with the statute and all of its comings and goings. You know, I've worked with secretaries of education, agency lawyers, the home study consultants over the years, legislative councils. I've seen them all take the law apart to look at its meaning and then put it back together. So I am well-versed and understand what it means. And I chose to really be on the advocacy side, kind of in the trenches in Montpelier, if you will. But I've helped so many parents over the years to enroll in home study, finding all those pieces. It's easy, but it's a sharp learning curve. And once you go, oh, this is not just a piece of cake, but there's so many little moving pieces that it's nice to have someone who's done it before to talk with you about it. So, you know, it's kind of what I've done over the years, and, of course, what VHEN and the board is doing. I know one of our members has been doing free Zoom meetings, helping parents to enroll in home study. So, yeah, it's been quite a ride, and I'm still at it. I'm a retired homeschooler, but, you know, I had an experience when they changed the law from the compulsory attendance age from 6 to 7. I had sent in my enrollments for everyone under 7, probably. But then now it meant in the middle of July, when I had gotten it done in, like, May, I had now had to enroll another child because the law changed and I did not know.
Oh, yeah, enrolling. So telling mm-hmm. the state I'm going to be homeschooling my child.
Well, yeah.
So, right, yep. Just before we get into that, because there is paperwork that needs to be done mm-hmm. and some things that people should know about in terms of, you know, just saying to the state, we're going to homeschool doesn't necessarily mean that the state has, you know, that's all gone through and that you're good to go and not to have your children in the school system. But before we get to that, you know, what would you say was the greatest joy in homeschooling your children? And then we can talk about the challenge or the thing that was hardest or the thing that, you know, that gave you the most pause.
Well, I saw my kids as little people, not children. I wasn't raising children, I was raising people, because when they were adults, I wanted them to be able to cross back over to me, and not so much the parent-child role, but a friend-to-friend role. And it's been a wonderful experience because my grown children are my best friends, along with a few other people, but they are also my best friends. And, you know, we've been able to have a good relationship. And, you know, it doesn't happen in all families or happen that way. It just depends on, you know, the pieces that are, you know, unique to your family. But that's one of my greatest joys, is that they are my friends. I can message with them. And, of course, they can giggle about me trying to use emojis and all that. But, you know, it's just fun. I have a connection with them. I always enjoyed teaching them. Of course, they'll say I never taught them. I gave them books and made them read. And one of my kids went to college expecting to be taught, and he went there, and he said, well, doggone it, I have to homeschool myself here too. So, you know, those just little moments. I just enjoyed being with them, you know, and they weren't perfect kids, but they were mine, you know. And yeah, we had our downsides. I mean, my family used to say, the only thing you ever do with your kids is math, because that's all we ever hear about. They don't ever hear about, you know, to complain about math all the time. It was like the thorn in my side. So, you know, it just worked for us. But I had the advantage of planning for it.
Yeah.
I wasn't thrown into it.
Right, which so many families are now. And let's talk about the hardest part a little bit later. But in terms of, you know, those families that are trying to figure this out now, and so many families have been waiting to see, you know, what is the school year going to look like? What is my district deciding? And then how does my family fit into that? And what are the decisions that we're going to make around this? So in terms of state requirements, what do you officially have to do to say to the state, I am planning to homeschool my children?
Okay, so I'm going to speak more from a non-COVID setting,
mm-hmm.
because the laws are clear. When we get into COVID, I mean, we've been ignoring laws right and left because of this pandemic. So things have kind of slid and we've kind of, you know, pushed them to the side. So the statute is set up such that you are notifying the state that you are going to homeschool your children in a home study program. You're willing to provide the information, and that's a minimum course of study for 8 subject areas of the course of study outlined in the law. It's all in their guidelines and in the statute. That you have to fill that out. And then you also have to provide you have to be able to prove that they had some kind of screening for disabilities. Now, this screening is simple. It's kindergarten screening. So we have a Form B you can fill out, and a doctor or a nurse or a certified licensed school teacher can fill that out for you. It's just a simple document to fill out. Or you could, if you're enrolled in the public schools, you could provide a report card, because the public schools are constantly, I mean, a teacher sits in her classroom and she watches over her kids and she says, that kid there, I think, needs something. You know, so they're constantly being assessed for disability. So the report card shows that someone's been watching. And that's really all they have to give, is you fill out your directory information, we call Form A, your minimum course of study for those subject areas, and some form of disability confirmation that they've seen something. Now, this disability, this Form B or this report card is not an IEP, an individualized educational plan. Okay, that is not that. The statute does not ask for that. It does not require that. It says one could be submitted if a hearing officer asks for one. Well, hearings are expensive. They're not calling hearings right and left. They just don't do that much if they can get out of it. So I tell parents, do not give them an IEP, because it gives way more information about your child and way more information for the enrollment process outlined in the statute. So Form A, minimum course of study, and a report card.
And that's what you need to provide
yep.
to the state. And right. then the state, I think, has, 45 days to process your
yep.
application. But and sometimes that happens sooner. But right now there's also a lot of applications that are probably going through. So that may
yep.
not be. So people need to know that just because you've sent in your paperwork, that doesn't mean you're enrolled in home study,
correct.
Right? So there's
correct.
The possibility. And again, COVID may
mm-hmm.
upend a lot of things, but there's a possibility of an issue with truancy if you just on one day decide to pull your children.
Correct. And I just want to add one more thing to my previous comment, that if your child does have a disability, you do need to have an additional document called adaptations, where you write from the IEP what you're going to do to address your child's disability while delivering the minimum course of study. So for those parents, there'd be a fourth piece of paper.
Well, and let me read a note that just came in from Kim,
mm-hmm.
who says, I'd like to push back on the comment that students with disabilities are less likely or not able to be homeschooled. There are many, many disabled kids who are successfully being homeschooled in Vermont and throughout the country, including my own 7th grader, who has been home educated
mm-hmm.
for over 2 years. Too many disabled students are being failed by the special education system, and many parents choose homeschool as the only option to give their disabled kids an appropriate and individualized education. So a note there from Kim on that.
I cannot tell you how many times I have heard that. And what people don't realize is that, okay, disabled kids are in the public schools, have one-on-one, two-on-ones, they have extra support. When you go to homeschool your child in your home, you back into what the child needs naturally, and that is someone as a one-on-one, mom and child, dad and child, whoever that is. And you provide them with that quiet place. You can devote your attention to them. Special ed kids do really well in homeschooling, and a lot of them are homeschooled for that very reason.
Okay, good to know. And so you were going to tell us about what happens after you file your paperwork in terms of
correct.
Making
correct.
Sure that your child doesn't run into problems with truancy.
All right. So I remember I said at the beginning, this is a notification. So you've notified the state. And you're not asking for permission. You don't need their approval, but they need to go through and make sure that those pieces I just outlined are there and are, you know, completely filled out. Like, you can't skip math in your minimum course of study. It's got to be in the minimum course of study. So they go through that, and this is the part that, you know, with COVID, that within 14 business days, they're supposed to respond to you, something's missing or you're enrolled. That's a 14-day time frame. It's not a deadline in the law. Just that's when the state can reply to you. And they're having trouble doing that because of the sheer volume of things. So I get that. But there's one thing that, you know, I don't know how you would ignore this part of the statute, because if you study it and you look at the timeline from the date they receive your enrollment notice, they have 45 days to stop an enrollment from going forward. If they don't do so, meaning they don't call a hearing, on day 45, the child is automatically enrolled. So for all those parents out there, know the date you submitted and count out 45 calendar days. After that date, your child is enrolled. You no longer have to respond or provide them with more information. And that's critical, because I know there's some that are running up against that now, and some will be, because they've been enrolling all summer. So at the end of 45 days, if they haven't contacted you or they haven't, you know, done anything, your child is enrolled. You can't stop that. It's just a passive part of the statute. It just happens. In normal times, they get it done before then. But I'm waiting to see how COVID affects that 45-day time frame, because, after that, no, I'm not providing you with anything more. You have all you're going to get.
That's interesting. Let's go to Stephen, who's calling in from Underhill. Hi, Stephen. What's your perspective?
Good morning. I homeschooled with my wife. We homeschooled 5 kids. And my oldest daughter was dyslexic, and in school she would have been told she had a learning disability. My opinion is schools have a teaching disability. We found an Orton Gillingham coach for her. Granted, it was a year or two later that she actually started reading, but she had to learn in a different method with associative learning through touch and other methods of decrypting this alphanumeric code that we write in. And the first book she read was Harry Potter, but I can remember, I also got my master's in education, and I can remember coming back with some tapes that I had running back in VHS days, and I walked out of the room to do something, and it was a tape on dyslexia, and they were talking about the handicap of it, and my daughter walked in and heard this tape running, and she started hollering at me, "What is this? Don't they know about Kennedy? Don't they know about Churchill? Don't they know that dyslexia is not a handicap?" And she was just angry. And I thought, man, we did the right thing. She is on it. So, in terms of homeschooling, well, a psychologist, we ask him about homeschooling, and, the whole business, people always say, well, they're not going to get socialized. And Dennis, my psychologist, said, then that's why you want to homeschool them, so they don't have to go through that whole peer pressure and that whole identity layering where you can't talk to a fourth grader because you're a fifth grader or a whatever. It's all nonsense. I think the whole schooling system was invented by people who rode horses.
Yeah, Stephen, I hear you and appreciate your perspective, and certainly appreciate that for your family, this felt like such a good choice for your daughter and such a successful choice for your 5 children. Interesting as well to hear your background in education. And Red, I'm interested in that, because for a lot of families, homeschooling just may not be an option, whether they would like to or not. They either don't have the ability, they don't have the money for it, they don't have the time for it. All parents are in the workforce. And we were talking earlier with Lola Dufour about the potential for inequity throughout the educational system, which is an issue that a lot of educators, a lot of school officials, a lot of families are trying to work through. How do you address that when it comes to homeschooling? I mean, everything from spending a couple $1,000s on curriculum to having a private tutor to other things that might make homeschooling more successful for some families than for others.
Well, obviously there's all sorts of things that, people can do. There's homeschool groups, there's different things like that. But I think it goes much deeper in that I maintain that there's a basic parental right here that a parent can teach their own children. So I don't know, forgive me, I'm the forever advocate here. Down the road, are we going to make it illegal because not everyone can afford to homeschool, therefore no one can? I can't go down that road. But I know parents who both work and still homeschool, and poor parents who are poor and still homeschool. And it's hard. And, So I know that some of these people do that, and they make that choice and that sacrifice. I don't know how they do it, but I know it's being done by a lot of people. So, you know, and I would think that, you know, the state, all right, here's one area the state could help is this whole special ed thing, and I don't want to make the show about that, but that if a parent says, I need speech services for my child, and I can't afford to go to a private entity to pay for them, why won't the school just offer my child speech services? Because a lot of what I hear is anecdotal, because I'm not in contact with the schools personally, is that they won't let me have speech services. I half enroll half time so they can get all the services or nothing. You know, some parents just want, you know, like 90 minutes or care from someone, respite care, I guess it is, for helping with certain children. So if we could ever find a way for the services that are out there that everybody gets from the public schools concerning education, we're more of a menu of things of I need speech services for my child, and I can get them in the school or the public school, the state, the taxpayers will pay for them. I mean, that would be a huge thing for a lot of parents who aren't wealthy, who are struggling to make it work financially for them, because as we all know, special ed care services are expensive. And, you know, I would add in this that there are some parents, there are always some parents who shouldn't homeschool, or other parents that should. They would prefer that the state or the institution do that for them, so they do have a choice in all of that. But it's, you know, is everything equal? The public schools don't offer an equal education either, you know, because I've heard of schools fighting over who had to take a special needs child for a homeschooling mom in Vermont. Neither one of them wanted the child because it was so overwhelming. The school does, you know, we can't provide that service for you either. So I'm not sure we should be looking at it as that equal, you know, thing, but what's best for the child.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting because I hear you kind of arguing with yourself there, Retta, on the one hand, you know, we can't make everything the same for everybody. That's not necessarily equity. On the other hand, here's an example of something that could help some families who might otherwise not. So I hear you saying it because I think, you know, as an advocate and as someone who thinks about education as a benefit for all children that should be accessible in different ways, you do have a responsibility in some ways to think about the equity piece of things for all children, unless what you're saying is, nope, it's everybody for themselves, and I'm just going to advocate for the people who can do this, you know? So I hear you not saying that, but okay, kind of wrestling with that.
I'm a school choice advocate. I think the money should follow the child for what the child needs, not what for parents or schools need, because I look at whatever's best for the child is best for the parent and the school. So I look at it in a reverse.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that money should be out there for the child and for the parents to say, well, we need that service and the state pays for it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's it has nothing to do with the enrollment process. Parents should be able to enroll, no strings attached, no money. But then once a child is enrolled and they have this document, they could then maybe check in with some of these other things. But I think that would require a funding structure, because I know at the federal level, the money is supposed to go to homeschool kids. But in Vermont, the money's handed to, the LEA, and then they dole it out, but it goes to the public schools first. The public schools control where it goes after that, and sometimes parents are told no, sometimes they're told yes. So even in home study, we've got this inequity of some schools saying yes, some saying no. So, you know, that is just a bigger question, but I do think that money should follow the child so that we're going to pay, if we're going to use tax dollars for pay for kids' education, we should pay for it wherever the parent wants it. But I know that's controversial, so I try to stay in the homeschooling world pretty much, where I help parents who try to do this, and I've really struggled with some families to get them the services they needed on my own.
Julia says, I'm a former homeschooling parent in Rupert who has over a decade of experience as an educational consultant and a private college admissions advisor. My client families live across the U.S. I work with many homeschoolers as well as students in bricks and mortar schools. My message to any new high school age homeschooling families is simple. Almost all colleges were accustomed to seeing applications from homeschoolers long before COVID, and most are eager to attract such students. Colleges generally understand that a student who's been a successful learner in a homeschooling environment is likely to thrive at college, and colleges particularly appreciate homeschoolers who've taken control of their own education and used that control to create unusual opportunities for their learning and skill development. She says, in brief, following your heart and mind as a homeschooler can be helpful rather than damaging at college admissions time. And paradoxically, along with daunting burdens and challenges for families, the tragedy of COVID may present exciting opportunities for learning and growth. When it comes to what you actually teach when you're homeschooling your children, there are companies that are set up to offer homeschooling curriculum. One of them is a national company based in Brattleboro called Oak Meadow, which is also a distance learning school. Catherine Hayes is the director of marketing and communications at Oak Meadow and a former Vermont Edition intern, I might add. Catherine, it's nice to talk with you in this capacity.
I know. It's great to talk to you, too.
So I imagine Oak Meadow has seen a lot more interest than normal, given what we're seeing nationally in terms of trends with families deciding to homeschool their children. What can you tell us about the stats you're seeing this year in comparison to normal years?
Yeah, it's really starting in March and April, we started to see a little bit of a spike of people who immediately knew they didn't want to stick with their school's distance learning models. But really over the summer, it's been pretty much exponential growth on the curriculum side. Just in terms of Vermont customers, we've seen about 400% more orders coming in from Vermont than we did last year.
400% more orders from Vermont than last year.
Yep.
Wow. And Vermont is one of your top states, right? I mean, you are a national organization, lots of homeschoolers who buy curriculum from Massachusetts and California, but Vermont, even though we're small, is up there among the top as well.
Yes, Vermont's one of our top states, and we try really hard to, you know, maintain those connections in Vermont and reach out to Vermont students and work with Vermont schools as well, who offer homeschooling, especially independent schools.
So what does homeschooling curriculum actually entail? What are people buying?
I mean, there's a huge variety of homeschooling curricula out there. For us, we provide a little bit more of a comprehensive all-in-one plan. So when you buy one of our curriculum packages, you're getting a full year's worth of materials in the core subjects, math, science, language arts, social studies, health, and we really try and lay everything out clearly in weekly lesson plans, assignment checklists, lots of activities, readings, and then also some help with, in terms of the planning, you know, planning pages and resources for that as well, because that's such a big part of getting started is really moving into the rhythm of homeschooling, which is obviously so different from working with a brick and mortar school.
So, Retta Dunlap, when it comes to curriculum support and this kind of sort of not even supplemental materials, but really a full curriculum, how does that, you know, how do most families that you talk with kind of put that kind of curriculum support into their plans versus what they're doing themselves to try to educate children in perhaps different ways than a standardized curriculum might be?
Right. Well, they first start talking to their friends, some who might be homeschooling. They get on Facebook and ask other people what they're using. They start Googling. Yeah, I mean, the curriculum industry for homeschooling is just huge. It's huge. And, you know, you want to be careful and be choosy. Try to find people who've used it. Talk to them. And that's usually how they find their curriculum. And, of course, you know, there are some who say, all I need is a library. And I've done the library part and unschooling and workbook part. You know, you just go out there and you find those pieces. And I try to tell parents you don't need those pieces to make a course of study. You know what you want them to do in reading and writing and math and history. Then go get some books and then, you know, just make the contents page carry you through the year because it's going to give you what you need in that subject. So it just depends on the people, the parents, how, you know, sometimes they want a packaged curriculum, something that just provides all, gives them the how-to do that. I know my first 2 years I was that way. I bought a set of workbooks that work through everything for the year, and then after that I branched out. So, you know, it's many ways to go at it. There's no one way. I know in Vermont there's a Classical Conversations. They're a group that gets together once a week, and then the parents go home 4 days a week, and they teach materials surrounded by what was done in that day. And there's other groups like that, probably not as big as Classical Conversations. So there's just no one way to do it. They just go out there and they start talking to other homeschoolers and they find, okay, I'll try that. Or a homeschooler will loan them books. I've been loaning books, you know, things like that.
Hmm. Catherine Hayes, what does it cost to purchase curriculum from Oak Meadow?
It varies depending on the grade level. Our general range for packages is between 365 and 745 for K through 8, and then some of our high school courses range from about $100 to $500.
So, you know, and in terms of what people are getting, you know, that can be expensive. We were talking again at the beginning mm-hmm. of the conversation about equity throughout the educational system. How do you think about that when it comes to perhaps new families to homeschooling who are thinking, oh, I really need some support with this. I'd like to purchase a curriculum. But boy, that sounds like a lot of money to be spending.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a big concern for us. You know, we do try and offer discounts to certain groups of people like military families, and we offer installment plans. The other thing that we really encourage is, you know, not being afraid, exactly like we were just talking about, not being afraid to just use a part of our curriculum or to use, you know, even just the curriculum samples that are posted on our website to mix and match along with some other things that you're doing just in your day-to-day. There's so much flexibility in homeschooling that, you know, even if a full curriculum package is cost prohibitive, there are other ways to approach it. And, you know, even just in your day-to-day life, whether you're cooking or, you know, going out yeah. in the backyard, there's so many opportunities for learning.
What about the distance learning school that families can enroll in through Oak Meadow? What are you seeing in terms of enrollment this year? I understand you actually had to close enrollment kind of early.
Yes. Yeah. I think it kind of goes back to people just wanting more structure and wanting a plan for the year. So that program provides, you know, teacher support, grading, kind of offloads some of the work that goes into the home teaching process. So we did have to close enrollments last year. In September, we had about 400 students. This year, we're already up to 700. So almost doubled. And yeah, I think a lot of families just gravitated towards that option because it seemed the closest to the schooling that they had been experiencing, you know, in their brick and mortar public schools.
That's Catherine Hayes, Director of Marketing and Communications at Oak Meadow, which is a distance learning school and provides independent homeschool curriculum and is based in Brattleboro. Catherine, thank you very much. Nice to talk with you.
Thank you so much.
And let's go to Lori, who's calling in from Jericho. Hi, Lori. Go right ahead.
Hi, Jane. Yeah, I'm a mom who homeschooled her five kids for over 20 years. And I just want to emphasize to people who might be scared, as I was when I started, it really is so flexible. And my approach became kind of like Retta was saying, if you teach math and you have plenty of reading for your children and then let them explore the things that they like in history and science and have them read a book and then write a report on it, you will find that your children will blossom and will enjoy learning so much more. It was really an amazing experience for our family.
Well, Lori, thank you for that piece of advice. I appreciate hearing it and hearing what happened in your family. We got a note from Beth who says, as a school counselor, I've met with many families who had or were homeschooling. While many parents have training as teachers or are natural educators, I'm concerned with the quality of education that some Vermont children will receive. Teachers in our schools have years of training and experience. This, along with the socialization provided by public school, can be sacrificed with some homeschool situations. So, Retta Dunlap, before we go for today, what advice do you have for families who are coming to this just this year, who maybe hadn't even considered it before, to make sure that they, as a family, and that the students they're teaching have a really good experience and a good learning base to build on?
Well, the whole process that the parents will be using to educate their children will provide a different, you know, will open different windows. And so that child's going to come out of this year with a stronger baseline. Now, will they have advanced enough in math for the public schools? I don't know, maybe not. But the child will have learned so many other things that will support them in whatever education they go on to. And I had dinner with my kids last night, and my middle son said to me, he said, Mom, you didn't cover everything, but when we found something we didn't know, you taught us how to learn, and we learned it, and we moved on. So, you know, that's kind of the end of that, and I just want to tell to all parents out there who are still considering, there is no date that you have to meet. There's no deadline for enrolling. You can enroll at any time during the calendar year. I know I've heard some things that the public school says, once school starts, you can't go to home study. Oh, yes, you can. You have trouble, call me. My number's on the website. So that August 1st deadline was just not, it's not for new enrollers. So if you still want to enroll at home study, you can certainly do so. My advice is to just get your paperwork done and then tell your public school what you've done.
Well, and we will put a link up to the Vermont Home Education Network on our webpage at vpr.org. Just click on Vermont Edition. Retta Dunlap is the president of VHEN and is a retired homeschooling parent, as she calls it. Retta, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thank you very much.